production of WMNF Tampa. In conjunction with the Poynter Institute. Poynter, a global leader in journalism. Additional support is provided by NYU Langone Medical Center, one of the nation's premier academic medical centers devoted to patient care, education, and research.
Welcome to another edition of Everyday Ethics. I'm Craig Kopp. I'm sitting in the studios of WMNF Tampa. Joining me via a very complicated electronic system is Kelly McBride. She's at the Poynter Institute across the bay from me in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hello, Kelly.
Hey, Craig.
In New York City at NYU's Langone Medical Center is Art Kaplan. Hello, Art.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Art's a medical ethicist. Kelly is a media ethicist. And we talk about ethical matters on this podcast, Everyday Ethics. And here's a big one. It's been the talk of the nation. It's in Kentucky, where a woman, Kim Davis, who's a county clerk of courts, has refused to grant marriage licenses to gay couples and stood her ground and ended up in jail.
Be no mistake about it, that if my deputy clerks, who do not have my authorization or the authority, they don't have my authority to issue any license whatsoever. Any unauthorized license that they issue will not have my name, my title, or my authority on it.
Kim Davis is out of jail now. A judge says she can remain out of jail as long as her office issues marriage licenses. She's staying out of the matter for now. The question at hand is she making an ethical stand based on her religious beliefs not to issue these marriage licenses? Who wants to take it first?
Can I go?
Okay, Kelly, I see your hand up first. Go.
So we have this thing called the Constitution. It's got a Bill of Rights attached to it. And the very first amendment says that there shall be a separation of church and state, that Congress shall make no law. And part of that is to get us away from religious doctrine being imposed on people who don't believe that religious doctrine. So our Supreme Court has spoken, and it has said that marriage should be open. That makes it the law of the land. And for a public official to cite her religious beliefs as a reason for disobeying the law is a direct violation of our Constitution. It's fine for her to hold those beliefs. It is not okay for her to impose those beliefs on people that she has been elected to serve. And so she's way out of bounds. And I don't even think this is like minorly controversial here.
So the bottom line ethically for her, if she were to act ethically and act on her beliefs, Art, I guess you can't hold those beliefs. Well, you can hold those beliefs, but you can't use them in your office. You can't hold this office, can you?
You can't. And so if you have conscience, religious beliefs, personal, ethical mores that say, you know, I can't sell or touch ham, or I am somebody who is not able to condone drinking alcohol, then I don't think you should be working in a liquor store or working in a place, a restaurant that offers, pork products to people. At some point, you have to say, look, this job requires you to do X, Y, and Z, and if you can't do the job, you have to resign. You can't hold this job. I feel that way, by the way, about pharmacists who say they can't prescribe pills, say contraception, that is legal. If you can't do it, you shouldn't be working in that job.
So the question I have, and I've been going through this over and over again, is how have we become so confused that there are presidential candidates who are treating Ms. Davis as if she is like Gandhi, that she is standing up for her beliefs and making a stand? How did we get this so confused?
Well, we're in a very emotional political season, and we're going to be in this political season for another year and a month. And it is easy to attach to emotion for political candidates, for talk show hosts, for people who want to get attention from the public, and particularly for people who would like to pander to a certain base of the public that might feel alienated or disenfranchised because they are seeing their belief system become more and more marginalized. It is easy to attach yourself to that emotion by simply standing next to her and saying, "I stand up for her." It's not necessarily right. In fact, I think it's downright manipulative to do so. But that's exactly what's happening.
Has the media, Kelly, done a decent job of explaining what's going on here, or has it just thrown gasoline on the flames?
You know, I think there's been a fair amount of gasoline, and not because they're covering the story, because I don't think you can avoid the story. It's pretty substantial when a publicly elected person says, "I'm not going to uphold the Constitution." However, in the choice to do that coverage, you can bring in voices of reason. And a lot of times I see the inflamed, "We're going to stand with her. This is an affront to our rights." And you don't see, or you see as a secondary, smaller piece of the story, the point of view that this is actually really dangerous. And this goes fundamentally against the very moral fiber of our nation. This isn't somebody standing up for morality. This is somebody going against the core foundational belief system that our nation was built on.
Art, I know you've been watching the coverage of this because it's been pretty unavoidable. Some people have attacked the moral fiber of Ms. Davis, pointing out her past before she had her religious conversion. Is she being treated unfairly by maybe the other side in this issue?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, I watched this situation. There's something very, there's good photo opportunity. If you look at her family, you look at her, you see everybody rallying around in this sort of rural Kentucky county, I think you're one step away from an offer for a reality TV show. And I bet she's sorting out offers to take on that role at some point. So I think she's going to end up okay. I'm not worried about how her past might be used against her into the future. I think she's going to become a little bit of a mini star for a short time. What I do believe, though, is we're missing the bigger story. And the bigger story is this, quite simply. There's no doubt that same-sex marriage is controversial. It goes against the grain of a lot of folks. A lot of people still have moral reservations about it. But, you know, aside from this clerk in this obscure Kentucky county and a few others, the law is being upheld, and people know what the right thing is to do when we have a decision that same-sex marriage is going to be legal. So, you know, you think about it, we're focusing in on Kim Davis, but this is the classic, how many small county clerks in small locations, rural locations, people with religious views are just signing the certificates and doing their job. I'll bet it's 10,000 to one.
Oh my gosh, did you guys see the new Tide commercial that just came out?
Yeah, I did.
It is a play on exactly this conversation, right? So you have these two men approaching a church in their tuxes to get married, and then you have this stern-looking church lady standing on the front of the steps of the church saying, "No, you may not come in here, and you're violating our beliefs." And then she takes out her Tide stick and she cleans off a messy part of the guy's white shirt and then lets them into the church. It's very clever and funny and subtle and humorous.
And indicative, perhaps, that while you said earlier, Kelly, that Kim Davis and this whole situation is very dangerous, a public official, a publicly elected official, refusing to uphold the law, in general, overall, there's really no danger here because everybody is going along with the Supreme Court's decision.
most everybody is upholding it. But there are lots of ways to make things difficult for people, to make access to rights unequal.
It's taken a long time for Americans to get used to the idea of divorce. That certainly wasn't something that was accepted by religion for a long, long time, but ultimately we did. I'm not surprised there's going to be some resistance and rear guard action and people sort of, even our some politicians saying, you know, we're going to overturn that or we're going to legislate that, but it's clear we're not. It's clear that society is ready for same-sex marriage and ready to move on. So I think Kim Davis becomes sort of an oddball footnote in the course of history. She's a little bit like the Japanese soldier who came out to surrender 20 years after the war was over. It's clear she's not going to win. It's clear that no one's going to back her up. It's clear that she's gained a lot of attention for taking her stance, but it's clear that she's going to be forgotten.
One last, I guess, observation here. Anybody surprised at how many gay couples were seeking a marriage license in this little Kentucky county?
I was shocked. I was absolutely surprised. Who knew that there were anybody who was going to step forward publicly and say, we're a couple, we're living together, we're same sex, and we want to get married in a small rural Kentucky area, which proves my point. Our friend Kim is not the cutting edge of societal acceptance. If you don't have to move to a big city or far away from your old Kentucky home, if you can stay where you are and live together as a married couple, I think, if you will, the social issue has passed Kim Davis by.
For Art Kaplan and Kelly McBride, I'm Craig Kopp, and this is Everyday Ethics, knowing the difference between what you have a right to do and what's right to do. Everyday Ethics is produced and edited by Brian Bierel.
He's French.
Well, that was Everyday Ethics, and you can hear Everyday Ethics on iTunes. Subscribe to it on iTunes and hear it Wednesday afternoons at 12:06 here on WMNF in Tampa. Well, you're listening to the Midpoint program here on 88.5 FM. And right now, we're going to change gears a little bit from what we've been talking about for the past hour. A few weeks ago, I was contacted by Jeannie Economos, who is with the Pesticide Safety and Environmental Health Organization of the Farm Worker Association of Florida. She's based in Apopka, and several times she's been a guest on this show. And she said, Rob, you've got to hear about what's going on in your area in Dover. And so right now we're going to talk with three people who live in the Dover, Thanodosassa area, Joanna McGrath, Mary Zenkovich, and Cynthia Ballard. And they join us live right now. And Joanna, Mary, and Cynthia, thanks for coming by WMNF. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
Nice to meet you. Jeannie mentioned that I should talk to you because of what's going on in your communities in East Hillsborough County. And Joanna, could I start with you? You live not too far. You live in the Thanodosassa area, and you're quite concerned about what's going on with pesticide spraying. Is that right?
Yes, sir. I live right off of Thanodosassa Road, and there are fields across. We live directly across the fields, and it started with my daughter. She kept complaining about being sick, and you know, everybody kept telling me that it was because you know, she's being around all these kids, she's being socialized. We're getting into VPK and so on. And then
How old is your daughter?
She was 5 at the time, because we were just starting school. And then the next year, we were at the bus stop in this big, black, thick plume of air. And I'm like, oh, somebody's house is on fire. So I run to the house to call the firemen. And they come over and tell us what happened, and not understanding everything, and that it was tarp material and everybody's safe. And I'm like, the tarp material off the fields? And he's like, yeah. And then, you know, as I dug more into this and to where I am today, it's the chemicals, how we related it to the time of the year, and her getting sick. And I've just been horrified ever since, because how could these chemicals make us so sick?
What kind of fields are near your house?
They're agricultural fields.
Yeah. What crops?
From what I can see, it's an assortment of agricultural items. But the one year, you know, everybody relates it to the strawberries. But I relate it to whatever they're growing in the field mm-hmm. at the time, because from all the research that I've done, these pesticides, they can be sprayed on the vegetables or the fruits. And, you know, and I'm still educating myself, because it's like last year it was Tolone. And then you get into research the two ingredients in Tolone. And you look at the research, and when you see the word cancer, I was just like, I'm like, somebody hold me back, because I'm like, now it's like, what can I do to detox my daughter and you know, to keep her safe?
How old's your daughter now?
She's 8 now.
And how's her health?
She complains to me all the time. Sorry. Like her tummy hurts. Like yesterday it was her tummy, and today it's her tummy. Yesterday her tummy hurt really bad. So I have certain things that I give her to what, you know, if something's in there and it's stirring around, you know, I'm like, okay, well, let's, you know, because the more fresh fruits, organics we eat and vegetables, she comes out of it and snaps out of it quicker. Plus, I give her what's called bentonite clay and certain teas like rosemary or cilantro or something like that. And she feels better. But then when we go to bed at night, like yesterday morning, you walk outside and it's like, oh my gosh, what is that smell? I mean, I'm back to the beginning. What is that smell?
What does it smell like outside of your house?
Well, a couple of days ago, I mean, it was like, oh my gosh, this is garlic. I'm like, it's really a garlic smell. I mean, I could distinct, because it gets into your nostrils and it burns, and then it goes down into your esophagus. Like, it's not swollen, but right here where you're, where, I don't know what you call this area. What do you call this
voice
area?
Voice box and
Your voice box, whatever. And it gets swollen. And you're constantly, this is gross, but you're hacking and coughing, because there's these like little white pus pockets that come up, and then your voice is cleared and you can talk. But for my baby, it's like, you know, I have to keep mommy going because I have to take care of my baby.
And, do you ever take her to the doctor?
Yeah, when this first started, he said it was a sinus infection. And I spoke with Mr. Weiss with the Department of Health, and he called over there and got the papers to show that we did go. And but when you're dealing with this, it's the toxins that are in your. I mean, we're an organism, and you got to keep your body, you know, well. Or
we're talking with people that live in East Hillsborough County, and they're concerned because of the pesticide spraying on agriculture in their neighborhoods. And we're talking with Joanna McGrath, who is just the voice you heard there. And also here is Mary Zenkovich and Cynthia Ballard. They're with the Dover Community Action Group, and our phone number is 813-239-9663. Cynthia, let me ask you about your story. I understand that you were a nurse for 25 years. Is that right?
That is correct,
yeah.
Yes.
Tell me about your story. How is the use of these agricultural chemicals, how do you think it's affecting you?
Well, it's affected me to the point that I can't breathe very well. I was riding a recumbent cat trike to North Florida and back once a week. And the evening that I was affected by the smell, well, it wasn't really a smell. It was, I went outside and the air was so thick I couldn't get a breath. And I actually called the chemical company and I said, I can't breathe. I'm losing my voice. I can't breathe. And they said, they immediately told me to get out of the area. So I got in my car and I was just driving and trying to get some air. And eventually I couldn't say a word to them. Well, since that day, I've been diagnosed with COPD, been in the hospital 5 times. I can barely walk now.
You're no longer riding your bike.
I can no longer ride my bike.
You were pretty athletic a few years ago.
I was very athletic.
When did this start?
2013.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of, do you know what kind of crops you live near? What kind of crops are grown near your house?
The strawberry fields.
Strawberry fields, mm-hmm. Yeah. And what happens, how often do they spray the strawberry fields?
Once a year.
What time of the year? Is it now?
Right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when they spray, what does it look like? What does it smell like?
Well, it immediately you have, or like in the morning, you have this fog. And a lot of times during the day, it's not as bad. But at night, like last night, it came to my house and around the area. I actually had to get in my car and go to Brandon, on the other side of Brandon, to actually be able to breathe. And I slept in my car last night.
You were forced out of your house and slept in your car?
Yes.
Because there's no escape in the house. The air conditioner unit doesn't take the smell out.
Yes, sir. It brings it right into the house. So I just got in the car and I drove, and which is difficult for me anyway to even drive because of, you know, my hips and everything. It's just, it's really put a damper on my life.
Mary Zenkovich, let me ask you your story. Tell us what your experiences have been with these chemicals.
Well, in 2013, the second week of August, they applied a new chemical, which I knew nothing about, and my family and I started getting sick respiratorily, coughing, severe headaches. And so I contacted a friend of mine who's a microbiologist, and I said, "What is going on?" She said, "Call the farmer, and I'll find out what this product is once you know." So I called the farmer, and he said the chemical was Paladin. It's dimethyl disulfide. And it was the first time that I had used it that year. So my friend got me the information to call Arkema, which is the company that provides Paladin. And they contacted me and said that they were sorry that we were sick. And I have documentation that told me not to go outside between 4 and 8 a.m. because that was the highest concentration levels. And
who told you not to go outside between?
Andrew Horvath. I have an email which stated from Arkema, the chemical company, and said that, if I can quote him, he said between 4 and 8 a.m., and that the smell would last between 21 to 28 days.
Does the smell ever enter your house?
They have recorded Paladin inside my home with their meters. The chemical company has. Mm-hmm. The smell comes in from outside. It lays in my garage. The first year they used a VIF, which is a lighter plastic, and it totally penetrated that plastic per the EPC of Hillsborough County. And so they forced them in 2014 to use a TIF, which is a totally impenetrable barrier, and to monitor the fields with their instruments to see what the vapor pesticide drift was, and that they had to be there and monitor. I have spoken with Andrew in my home several times with Rob Welker from Arkema, they promised us before the 2014 season happened, "Oh, you won't smell anything, you won't get sick." And I said, "Please, we can't." I had bronchitis a total of 4 times from August 2013 until February 2014. So when I spoke to them in March, they said, "No, we've got it under control. You know, you won't smell it at all this year." Well, 2014 came around, and within 3 days of them applying it, my daughter and I had severe headaches, and the lymph nodes in our neck and under our arms were swollen. We couldn't move our neck, and my daughter was diagnosed with a doctor of upper respiratory infection, sinus infection, and the next couple days I went to the walk-in clinic and they said it upper respiratory infection. And from then on, you know, I had bronchitis 6 times, 2014 to 2015.
What kind of treatment did the doctors give you?
They treat it with steroids and antibiotics.
Did that work?
The steroids helped some, the antibiotics only when it got to the point of infection. But what this chemical also does, from 2013 I started talking to scientists. I started researching myself. I started talking to the people in our neighborhoods and started doing my own research, which I categorized the symptoms of everybody that were basically the same, the respiratory symptoms, the burning of the eyes, the coughing, the severe headaches, vomiting and diarrhea, the rashes, the burning in the chest, the swollen lymph nodes, people who had asthma became so severe, or those that didn't have any asthma are now on inhalers. You became extremely lethargic after a low levels of this toxin inside your house. In 2014, I marked it on my calendar. The smell was present for 12 weeks. And so 12 weeks, even at a low level, research states that it's not good for you.
What do we know, or what have you found out about this chemical Paladin in terms of its effect on humans?
Dimethyl disulfide is the chemical with chlorpicrin that makes up Pallidinese. My research and from documentation from NIH, from the EPA, registration from their own documents, it is, let me get word for word, but as far as environmentally, it's toxic to aquatic life. It causes irritation to the skin, eyes, and respiratory tract. It is not suspected to have been carcinogenic, but there are no proof of those facts. It causes the, there's a research study from, I can't think of where it is right now, I'm sorry, that states that it neurologically affects you. And there are many in our neighborhood. There is a gentleman that was running every day. And in 2013, he was exposed, and he is now in a wheelchair because it neurologically affected him to the point that he can no longer walk.
How old is he?
He's 62.
Hmm. Is that the study that was done in Africa?
Yes, that was the one that stated that it causes neurological issues, which include Parkinson's, because it affects the mitochondria of your body, and it negatively affects it. It causes a hyperpolarization, is what they call it.
Well, we're talking with some people who may have been chemically poisoned in eastern Hillsborough County by agricultural pesticides. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Mary, how old is your daughter?
My daughter is 17. My son is 22, and they both were living in 2013, and they both were extremely sick. My son, before 2015, last year, he was vomiting and nose was pouring blood at the same time in the middle of the night. And he was extremely ill, and my daughter had several respiratory infections within a four-month period that they just couldn't heal up, and we were constantly sick. This year, my son moved out. He said, I'm not going to stay here, Mom.
He couldn't stay. Where did he move?
He moved to Tampa.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you, in terms of the people in the neighborhood, and we're talking about the Dover area, the Thanodosassa area, in terms of the people in the neighborhood, how many have you met? And Cynthia and Mary and Joanne, I want to ask you all, how many people have you met that have similar complaints about these chemicals?
This is Mary. I documented in 2014 over 135 actually came to our meeting with at Turkey Creek Middle School with the Florida Department of Health and the Florida Department of Agriculture and the EPC. We had a meeting. And 135 people representing their families. And there were many more that just weren't able to come at that time and so forth. And I had started taking their information, started asking them about what their symptoms were. We started going door to door, asking people, you know, is Pallidin affecting you? Is the dimethyl disulfide, do you smell it? Do you have any symptoms from it? And there were a lot of people. But it's impossible for me to go door to door to 5,000 people that live in that area.
And it always smells like garlic? Is that the...
To me, it's never been garlic. It smells like dead animals. And it comes inside your house, and it smells like there's a dead animal underneath your house. It's not just the smell. You know, lots of people say, oh, it's just the smell they're complaining about. No, this smell makes us very ill. My children they are extremely healthy. We're never sick. Maybe once a year have a little cold or something. But my children were extremely healthy.
And prior to 2013, when they weren't using this chemical, you didn't have these kind of problems?
No, I have actually lived in Dover for 26 years. Cindy has lived about 25, right?
About that, yes.
And some of the older people that have lived there 52 and almost 60 years, they've never had any issues with the predecessor, which is methyl bromide, that they took off the market. Until they applied this new chemical is when it started affecting us.
Well, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Has the Department of Health or the EPC or the Department of Agriculture, have they been of any help to the three of you?
In 2013, when I contacted the Florida Department of Agriculture, I felt that they were trying to figure out what the problem was. They knew it was a new chemical, and they knew it was on a conditional registration. And they were trying to see what was making them, you know, making us sick, and they came out and investigated. 2014, the Department of Health did a, which is here in my hand, they did a study of only those people that called in, and they did not contact people. You had to call them. So not everybody knew to even contact the Department of Health, but 68 of those people that called in, they're stated in this report that the only reason it wasn't a definite was because there is no blood test to state that it's in your body, but we all had the same symptoms. We all had the same exposure. And so they said that it was more than likely that we were exposed to a chemical that made us ill.
In 1982, the EPA did studies of this DMDS, dimethyl disulfide, and they tested humans for the adipose tissue, and they found pallidin or DMDS in the adipose tissue of the test subjects. They found it in human breast milk. They found it in urine, and they also found it in expired air of 54 non-smoking adults in 1982.
So are you saying that it doesn't break down quickly? Is that what you're saying?
No, it does not. Yeah. And what it does is it, and this was told to me from the epidemiologist because I asked him, why are we not getting better and it stays in your body? And he said, well, here's the thing about dimethyl disulfide. It gets to the cellular level of your body and basically will wreak havoc on people who already have pre-existing conditions. It'll worsen your condition. But what it does is it changes. It's called hyperpolarization. It goes to the cells and creates a negative effect on your body. Now, it doesn't affect everybody. It affects women worse because of our hormonal structure and because we have more fat content than men. And children, because they breathe faster than we do. They expel oxygen and take it in a lot faster than we do. So there are many that have had to be on asthma medicine.
Ian, if the government regulatory agencies were doing what you would want them to do, what should they be doing? What should either the county EPC or the Florida Department of Health or the Department of Agriculture, if you had your druthers, what should they do?
Well, when you refer to the EPC, per legislation, it falls back on FDACS, which is the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. So you got to take EPC out of the mix. It's the Department of Health, it's FDACS, it's under statute. So you bring in the state of Florida and you bring in the EPA. And per Florida statutes, pesticide drift is illegal. It's also criminal, according to the statute.
So when a farmer sprays their field, that chemical is supposed to stay on their field and not move over to the houses next door?
Well, according to the university,
is that it's applied. There's two methods. There's a shank method that they mound the plastic. I mean, they mound the soil up and they inject it 8 inches in the soil and immediately cover it up with a plastic. It's not sprayed openly on the field because it's such a highly restricted pesticide. It is not allowed to be exposed to air at all. And then there's another drip method where they put in lines underneath the plastic and they drip this toxic substance for a period of time. But the first year in 2013, they used a VIF. And in the EPA's report to the county commission in Hillsborough County, it stated they found that it failed. It penetrated the plastic. It leaked out the ends. We had torrential rains every year we've had torrential rains during this time. And that substance does not stay under the plastic. And so the second year, they enforced that you have to use a totally impenetrable fabric and the monitoring. Well, when they used that fabric, it still leaked through and became ambient air. Rob Welker from Arkema sat in my kitchen and dining room table amongst five other people and Channel 8 News. And his comment is that we don't know for sure if it's pallidin that is making you sick. And I said, Rob, how can you say that when I've never been sick before? And he said, well, let me explain it to you. Pallidin is 3.4 times heavier than air, and that because of the agricultural chemicals that are floating around in the air all over and people using different chemicals, that Paladin is considered a carrier. And whatever's in the air, Paladin will pick up and move to the lowest areas. So I asked him, I said, so Paladin is considered the carrier. Not only is Paladin making me sick, but now this, all the chemicals that are around me and other farmers behind me that are not using that, whatever restricted use pesticide that they're using, it's being put in this vapor, dropped in my yard between 4 and 8 a.m. in the morning, pulled inside my house, and my family's breathing it. He says, well, there's really no way to tell that. So that proved to me right there that it was a lot scarier than I thought.
And according to the University of Florida, they did a paper on pesticide. They did a research paper on pesticide drift. And when I went back to reference it, it has been taken down. And it talks about the author, and I was trying to find the document that shows this, but you know, it's, I will get it put on the front of the website so that they can see this was the screen capture we took, which now the document is gone.
So it's a mystery as to why it's down, or is it no mystery?
I this is Mary. I would also like to say we got this on our mailbox. They're supposed to notify the neighbors if they're
holding
using
up a piece of paper that
it says community outreach, and it's by Paladin from Arkema, and they put it on my mailbox, and to notify the people closest to the fields.
When was this put on your mailbox?
This was put in 2014. Mm-hmm. 2013, it was not. And they were told that they had to notify from the Hillsborough County that you had to notify the residents to live closest to the fields that you're using this restricted use pesticide. And some of the things that it says, that the soil fumigant has potential risk to pose risk concerns to people involved in the application, workers who enter the fumigated fields, and people who live near the treated area. It's a restricted use product. They are telling everybody it's just garlic, it's not harmful to you. But it's a restricted use product, and right here on the registration, which I can show you, it says at the top of the registration, the reason why that this is a restricted use fumigant is because it is the inhalation risk to humans. So you don't make something that's from the EPA, restricted use pesticide, that is not harmful and say that. If it was just garlic, I use garlic probably every day in all my food, but it's not that. And this is this chemical.
It biodegrades. Garlic biodegrades.
Yeah,
I take it you're saying
not.
This chemical doesn't biodegrade.
And it says the early signs themselves. They have it right here in their early signs is that it has a strong objectionable odor, and it can cause nausea, headaches, drowsiness, and dizziness.
To this question of chemical drift, have you had any of the government regulators out in your homes to smell what it smells like inside your house when they apply this pesticide or this chemical?
I've had many.
Yeah.
I really have. This is Mary. I have had many. I've had the Florida Department of Agriculture probably at least six times in the last 3 years. I've had the EPC, Marvin Blunt from EPC. I've had him at my house three or four times. I've talked to Jerry Campbell. He hasn't been to my house, but I've also had Andrew Horvath, Rob Welker, and one of their assistants at my house probably seven times in the last 2 years.
Have they done anything to stop the drift?
They thought that they had it under control the second year when they did use the totally impenetrable fabric, and it wasn't. And they're saying that they're not registering it on their meters and that we're just complaining about the smell. But
Cindy, you left your house the other night.
Mm-hmm.
Last night. Because it smelled so bad.
It was so bad.
And I have people in the neighborhood.
If somebody were to go out there today, would they smell it in your house?
Not right now.
It dissipates in the sunlight.
It dissipates. And so we're blowing fans. We've got fans in the windows trying to get it out of the house. But as she said, during that time of the morning,
4 to 8 a.m.
And I sleep with a BiPAP on. So I'm inside with an air conditioner going, with a BiPAP on, and it's coming into my house. The air conditioner just blows it right into it, and I have to take my mask off. I took my mask off, and I just got my cane and my keys and hobbled out to my car, and I drove on the other side of Brandon.
Well, we're talking with Cindy Ballard, Mary Zenkovich, and Joanna McGrath. They all live in the Dover, Thanota-Sassa area, and we're talking about chemicals being sprayed in their neighborhood in eastern Hillsborough County. Let's bring on some people on the phone, and you all have headphones around you. You can put the headphones on to hear these callers. Mac is in Dover. Mac, do you know anything about this?
Yeah, I sure do. As a matter of fact, I live right next to Mary, and we've experienced the same thing, for the last 3 years. I've lived here for about 16 years and didn't have any of these reactions that I had in the last 3 years. Also, my 13-year-old son with some of these same symptoms, that come up with, burning chest, and he had a bloody nose last year. This year, we moved out for almost about a week and a half trying to get away from it, but as soon as I moved back, still the smells and the headaches came back and the sore throats. I think what I heard you guys talking about that I'd like to bring up is I spoke to the Florida Department of Agriculture this year, spoke to Dale Duberly personally, and asked him about what they are, because I think you'd asked that question. What was the state doing for us folks? What was the Environmental Protection Agency doing, these people that are supposed to be in our corner? I asked him, I said, well, what are you guys doing for us? Well, he said, we're taking reports. I asked him, well, are you guys down here, monitoring soil, monitoring water, monitoring air? And he told me, no, that we're not. And when I asked him why, he said, they do not have the resources or the funds or the money. Even though this is a multi-billion-dollar agricultural business here in Florida, they didn't have the money to, he didn't say protect us, but that's how I look at it, protect us. I said, well, who is? The chemical company is. And in fact, he was right in that, because several days later, I met with a gentleman who was across from my property. I'm like, we look out for each other out there. I'm like, well, who is this? And so I asked him his name. He said his name was Clem. I said, well, who are you from? He said, the chemical company, Arkema. And I said, well, what are you doing, And he had this machine, this gasometer, or whatever you call it, on the back of his car, and he said he was testing air. And I thought to myself, why isn't the state who's giving this conditional registration, on this restricted pesticide, a fumigant, why are they not out here in our yards, in our homes?
Because the company is self-regulating itself, it's monitoring itself. It's not there's no independence there. We got to rely on the company's honesty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mac, thanks a lot. Mac, what do you think needs to be done?
What do I think needs to be done?
Yeah.
I think the government regulatory agencies need to step in. I think we need to go to safer products. California and our research have done things with soil sterilization. Here in Florida, we have a high water table in our area. We have very sandy soil, so that leaches water quickly, and it also brings up water into the fog bank that was being discussed more readily and travels more readily. I think that they really need to try, and I understand, I'm an agriculture guy. I understand that there are ways they've done things for years. But sometimes these new products don't work. They may work in the field, but not for human standards. I think we need to go, try to go to that little bit more of an organic way that we can do things, or at least be testing in that way to move that way. But right now, what we're experiencing in our neighborhood, and I have personally talked to over 100 people who have felt even more ill effects, throwing up in their sleep. I can't fathom that. I took my son away from here just because of hearing things of people going through that. There needs to be some things done. We need to get some attention to this matter and not just have it swept under the rug, because we live out here too. We're a community that lives together.
Well,
we're not enemies with these guys.
Yeah,
we're not trying to shut down the farmers. We just want to live and be able to walk outside, and I take my son to school without wearing gas masks.
Mac, thanks a lot. Let's hope somebody in the government is listening. Mac, thank you. All right. Good to hear from
you.
813-239-9663. I got to wonder about the farmers' families themselves.
This is Mac's pond. You can see the picture.
You're holding up a picture of a kind of a green slimed pond with kind of a chemical
petroleum
film across.
Petroleum-based. Mm-hmm. And that is what happened to his pond in every year He has an aerator that purifies his water. And every year when they apply this chemical, this comes on his pond, and the Florida EPC comes out and says, we'll check for algae, but they will not check for any chemicals. They don't have the ability to do that.
Can people see this photograph online somewhere?
Yes. If they look at sulfurodorsmell.weebly.com, we have pictures of this on there showing them what has happened to his pond. And people are complaining in their yard that their dogs have been eating the grass and the petroleum-based substance on top of the grass, and it's making their dogs very ill.
Have you seen other animals affected by this?
Yes. In 2014, we were told that there was a, actually I spoke to her myself, that she worked for a pet store, and she raised birds on her back porch to be sold there, and a few days after applied paladin, all the birds had died. And there are people that have said that their animals have died. We have no birds in our yard at this present time. They have left, and every year they have left because they cannot handle the smell.
Because the chemical is being applied right now, and the birds in are dead or gone from Dover, Thanodes, Hassa. A lot of the area.
Yes.
Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to a Jeff who's in Plant City. Jeff, what would you like to say? Jeff?
My first question is, does this smell, is it incorporated so that it's noticeable, or is this the actual smell of the product?
Are you saying, is it like natural gas smell, or like it's a warning smell? Is this the smell of the product?
Well, from what Arkema has stated to me, and let me read from their brochure so that I can say that if you are smelling it, it says paladin vapor is heavier than air, and as a result of gravity will tend to flow into geographic depressed areas during atmospheric inversions. It says if you smell this or detect this pronounced garlic-like odor, move uphill and away from the fumigant field to reduce your exposure. Odor should dissipate once the atmospheric conditions resolve. When odor is no longer detected, it is safe to return to the area. This is from their community outreach sheet that was put on my mailbox in 2014.
When odor is detected, it's no longer safe to return to the area? Is that what you said?
When odor is no longer detected is when it is safe to return.
Oh, when is it safe? Okay, I got it.
When you don't smell it anymore.
So that's the safe re-entry time, when you don't smell it anymore.
Well, we smelled it for 12 weeks last year.
So it's unsafe when you smell it.
Well, they say, no, it's at such minute levels. They'll tell you that it's such minute levels that it won't harm you. But it is harming people.
How does the humidity in the air affect it?
That's the other thing that, you know, I've asked those questions myself, that in their registration, which is dated 6/10/14 through the EPA paladin registration, it says, and you can go look for this yourself online, it says that you cannot do you use this product if there's been heavy rains, the weather advisory that there should not be more than 5 miles an hour winds, and that the humidity level should not be high. And, you know, I encourage you to look for this yourself because it's not my words. It's their documentation from the EPA. And all of those things have happened in the last 3 years, and water has run off the fields, into their ditches, over the roads, into our yards, and into our ponds.
Especially in a year like this one, we're already almost 30 inches above normal.
Yes, sir. That's true. And I have pictures of it.
My experience has been in horticulture more than agriculture. But in the times that I was working for a lawn treatment company, and I also went through a course for to become a certified burner, and particularly with the lawn chemicals, they made you aware of what was known as the chemically sensitive person's list. And it was incumbent upon the applicator to notify those people on that list when you were applying chemicals. You know, you had to figure out where they were and where you were working, and if it was within a certain area, you had to tell them. Now, it seems to me that agriculture has this trump card. You know, these guys put a sign up on the edge of their property saying that they're engaged in agriculture and they have the right to apply these chemicals and so on and so forth. And, you know, we've seen this with the med flies, you know, where they could spray malathion over the whole county.
That's true.
And
All right. Jeff, thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments.
You.
All right. It's good to hear from you. Sue writes this. This conversation is unbelievable. So I've got a question about what crops they're spraying. We're all ingesting this. Big money getting bigger, stomping on the small man. This is sick, writes Sue, who's out there somewhere out there in cyberspace. And then Susan writes this. We're a family that had to leave our home in Dover for more than 5 weeks due to the spraying of chloropicrin on the strawberry fields close by. We are between McIntosh Road and Kingsway Road. Because our property is low-lying and chloropicrin is mustard gas and heavier than air, drifts of this pesticide settle in the lower area. My son, who has inhalant allergies and a seizure disorder, and myself were severely sick from chloropicrin last September 22nd. We've been under doctor's care ever since. The initial symptoms were shortness of breath, severe headache, coughing, vomiting, and eye and nasal irritation. That's just part of what Susan had to say, who's checking in with us. Let's go back to the phones for just a few more minutes. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, and this is the Midpoint Program. And let's go to Armi in Land O'Lakes. Armi, what would you like to say?
Hi. Your guests are really talking about a well-documented environmental illness. It is known as MCS, multiple chemical sensitivity. It is really chemical injury, and it's just not an isolated event. There are just a lot of studies in this country, but worldwide. And it's not just pesticides, for example, Monsanto's Roundup, a herbicide used widely, is banned in many countries, recently in France and Germany. The list goes on. It is toxic chemicals that are not being regulated for their toxicity. As you mentioned earlier, corporations supposedly volunteer to comply. EPA, CDC appear to have been intimidated to regulate this widespread problem of toxic artificial chemicals in almost every consumer product. As for outgassing in an environment, well, it's volatile organic compounds, and organic is the word. It leaves a layer of the chemical on surfaces.
All right. Armia, thank you very much for your call, and thanks for pointing that out. I want to ask Joanna and Mary and Cynthia, what's next? Are there any meetings coming up that your group, the Dover Community Action Group, is holding, or can people contact you, or what's next?
This is Mary. We actually, in 2014, when we had the community meeting, they were supposed to follow up with another meeting for the community to express any of the other concerns that they may have, and they decided not to do that. At this point, that's why we have a website. It's sulfurodorsmell.weebly.com. And we have vital information on a lot of the chemicals that they're using, the pesticides that they're using in our area, that they can educate themselves without just taking our word for it. You know, that's part of why I'm doing research. It's not just for myself, because for 24 years, I trusted the farmers and never would have thought they would put anything on their fields that would harm the neighbors. And so when my eyes were opened, I thought, you know, people should know that this stuff makes them sick. But if they want to contact us, we have a petition online that they can sign. We are in the process of notifying more representatives and doing what we can.
Have any state legislators come forward to try to help you?
Nobody. Representative Ross Spano, we had a meeting with him, and he is the one that there's now this year for the first time that there is an educational resource for doctors and nurses that they are sending from the Florida Department of Health out to notify them that there is some toxic effects from dimethyl disulfite. And so he helped us do that. And
okay, well, Mary, I'm sorry to say we're out of time, but if people want to Can you hang out in the studios for a few more minutes and maybe take a phone call from a listener if anybody's got a question for you?
Yes, okay. And I'd like to read something from Jeannie Economus.
Just really quickly, because we're out of time.
She said that these pesticide soil fumigants are among the most toxic and drift-prone agricultural pesticides used in California. And it causes asthma, reduces lung capacity. It forms ground-level ozone or smog, which damages lung tissue.
All right. Well, Cynthia Ballard, Mary Zenkovich, and Joanna McGrath, thank you for coming by WMNF. It's good to have you here, and good luck, too. We'll follow this. If you want to comment about this show, call us up at